from the infectious studios of NPR station WDIY, Bethlehem, PA. It is time for another biting episode of Chemical-Free Horticultural Hijinks. You bet your garden. Do you cheer or worry when mosquito spray trucks come rumbling down your street? I'm Mike McGrath, and on today's show, we'll discuss what those trucks might be spraying, identify the bad sprays, and identify the alternative that's remarkably effective and safe for you and the environment, and just plain help you and your family stay unbit. Plus, your fabulous phone call questions, comments, tips, tricks, suggestions, and basically bias bonifications. So stay right where you are, cats and kittens, because it's all coming up faster than you not slapping yourself silly. Welcome to another thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden, now emanating from the eclectic studios of NPR station WDIY in Bethlehem, PA. Many choices, real voices. I'm your real voice, Mike McGrath, and we kick off today's show with another story in the news, which we are calling, Who Knew That Ears of Corn Could Sweat? The answer, farmers in the Midwest, who have long known about this somewhat disorienting fact. And that corn is getting sweatier, quote, thanks to climate change. Melissa Walling reported on this strange phenomena recently in the New York Times. And her story was picked up on September 3rd by the Allentown Morning Call with the headline, Sweaty Corn Helps to Make Midwest Even More Humid. Now, come on, how could you not read the story after seeing that headline? Barb Bosted, who moved to Nebraska to work for the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, explains that despite the distinct lack of an ocean in Nebraska, there is, quote, an ocean of corn to be studied. Now, I always thought that the term oceans of corn referred to the enormous amount of land occupied by that crop throughout the Midwest. But it turns out to be an old farmer's expression describing how the sweat from all that corn creates a level of humidity that you have to swim through to walk a block. That's right, it's the corn that makes the air humid, not the other way around. Quote the article, Midwestern summers might be growing stickier, again, thanks to climate change and the steady march of industrial agriculture. Climate change is driving warmer temperatures and warmer nights and allowing the atmosphere to hold more moisture. Asked whether sweatier corn is really an effect of climate change, Columbia University researcher Lou Ziska, quote, simply said, yes. This climate change is causing warmer temperatures, making the corn sweat even more moisture into the air, raising the humidity and making people miserable. Even worse, notes the Times article, those warmer temperatures allow farmers to plant corn further north, increasing the total amount of corn growing in the United States, where I will personally add we are already growing way too much to, quote, meet the demand for ethanol for gasoline, an additive we haven't needed since Jimmy Carter was president. Carter, by the way, famously grew peanuts, whose sweatiness is unknown. Sweaty air is, quote, especially noticeable in the Midwest because so much corn is grown there, and it all reaches the stage of, wait for it now, evapotranspiration at around the same time, creating a real surge that you can feel, explains researcher Barb Bosted. Soybeans, by the way, which we also grow way too much of, are just as sweaty. Democrat or Republican, libertarian, left wing, right wing, in the middle wing, none of us desire more humidity. And over 90% of that corn and soybeans is genetically engineered to allow virtually unlimited amounts of the herbicide Roundup to be sprayed. And the size of the monocultures in which these crops are grown don't support pollinators, which we need to grow real food. Sorry for the pun, but it's going to take a sea change to make things better. Our phone number, 610-694-8100, extension number 3. Bob, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thanks, Mike. It's good to be here. Thanks for taking the call.
Well, thank you for making it, sir. Where are you?
Bellefonte, Pennsylvania.
Oh, right next to State College.
Why, sure.
Okay, so what can we do you for?
Well, I have an 8-year-old sour cherry tree that has been overall healthy, though it's produced a few blossoms in the past 2 years and no fruits yet. But in early July, black spots appeared on the lower leaves, which then turned yellow and fell off the tree.
Okay.
And the tree has now been left naked.
Oh,
so I have two questions, basically. Will the tree recover and grow new leaves and false blossoms in the spring? And the second question is there anything I can do to prevent this happening next year?
Well, whether it will recover or not, God only knows, or only God knows. There's no way to predict. Now, you say this tree is 2 years old.
Eight years old.
Oh,
yeah.
Man. Yeah, you're hurting. Did you plant it originally?
I did.
And
planted it 7 years ago.
Okay, so was it healthy for the first, say, 5 years?
Yeah, it's been healthy all along.
Okay, well, what changed?
I don't know what changed. The weather's been consistent. It wasn't too hot or too cold or too wet or too dry. We've had a crazy summer, of course, as you know.
Yeah, this started before this summer. Is the tree mulched?
I do mulch it a little bit around it, yeah.
With what?
Compost.
Okay, well, that's good. Where's the compost from? Did you make it or did you buy it?
I buy it from the local recycling center, which sells a really good quality compost, I think.
Well, it's difficult for a regular human to tell what's good and what's bad. But because it's a municipality selling compost, they have to have analysis on paper showing any level of heavy metals, the organic matter content, which you want to be high. And all you have to do is request that. It's like a report card on your compost. Now, have you continually used this compost?
Back from
year two, three, four?
Yeah, it's been my go-to place to get compost, and it's worked well for the garden. Everything else has been growing nicely.
Right, so nothing changed. Have other trees grown up around it?
No, it's pretty isolated where it is.
All right. Well, I regrettably have to tell you that these symptoms indicate a disease that's very tough to eradicate. Oh. How long did you have leaves on the tree this year? How many months?
Well, from the spring, so that started in early April, let's say, until about early July.
Did you say even early on you didn't have a lot of flowers?
Haven't had flowers at all. I had three blossoms this year. Maybe I had one the previous year and none before that.
None in the first, 5 years?
That's right.
That should have bloomed the second year. Did you plant it?
I did.
How did you plant it? In other words, was it in a pot or bare root?
It was in a pot. No, let's see. I had to remember 7 years ago. I think it was bundled in some way. I dug a big hole to accommodate the root ball.
Right.
And put some good compost around it.
Okay.
And thought that would do the trick, and it seemed to be good for the first few years.
Okay, so let me tell people out there the correct way to plant a tree. Now, did you plant it with those wrappings intact?
I think I may have done that because I think that was the recommendation from the nursery.
Yeah, because they want to sell you a new tree.
Okay.
You know, think about it. They're not there to keep your expensive trees and shrubs alive. You know, they want you to come back and they'll convince you it was your fault. No. What has happened is the roots have grown out and they're being strangled. Because despite what you were told, burlap does not rot underground. You're in an anaerobic situation without oxygen. If it laid out on the surface and got wet, dry, hot, cold, it would rot. But underground, it's like those newspapers in landfills that they recover after 50 years, and you can read the front page. So that was a big mistake. That's probably the mistake here because your tree has been struggling. Once it got to be about 2 or 3 years old and it realized it couldn't send its roots out into the surrounding soil. Number two, most people, not just you, have this misconception of improving the soil. That is totally wrong. You want to refill the hole with the same soil you removed. Because if you make a nice little womb of compost and perlite and, nice light potting mix, why would the roots ever go beyond that? That's like having a child graduate college and you put a 100-inch color TV into their room. What are you thinking? You want them to go away. You want them to reach out, get out of the house. So your roots were both strangled and thought they were happy. But if you practice tough love, take off all the wrappings, plant the tree high. You want a wide hole, not a deep one. And then you fill it back in with the soil you removed, then those roots have to grow out, right? They have no other choice. And the compost goes on top as a mulch. Now, when you look at the tree, can you see the root flare above ground, the part of the trunk that meets the root system?
No.
Okay, so you planted it too deep. Okay. Any bark that's underground will begin to rot.
There's some rotting going on at the foot of the tree.
Yeah. You know, again, it's counterintuitive, but have you ever seen a tree growing in a forest or in the wild where you didn't see the root system?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, and the roots actually enjoy the above ground air. And it doesn't have to be ridiculous, but if it's a lollipop, it's going to have a very short life. And 8 years, yeah. That's about the lifespan this would have. You can dig it up if you want. You can wait till the dead of winter, and then, it's a summer bloomer, so you're screwed, blued, and tattooed no matter what you do here. But dig it up when it goes dormant, take that stuff off, and examine the bottom of the trunk. If the bark has rotted all the way around in a circle, use the wood for grilling. Any fruit wood is fabulous on a grill that uses wood. Apple wood is the best, but you get that natural smoky flavor. And then buy a fresh tree. Did you get it at a local nursery or did you get it at like Home Depot?
No, I got it at a local nursery.
Good. You can go back to them. Maybe you want to educate them. And if you do the things I said, take off any wrappings whatsoever and spread the roots out a little bit, refill the hole with the soil you took out, spread compost around that beginning 6 inches away from the trunk, and make sure it's not a lollipop. If it is a lollipop, don't finish up. Pull it higher. Put some more soil under it so you can see where the two parts of the tree meet. And if, like you said, if it's out in the open and all alone, it should do spectacularly.
What's the best time of year to plant one then?
Actually, now. Fall is the best time, has the highest survival rate for trees and shrubs. Plus, nurseries are generally anxious to get rid of their old stock, you know, so they can bring in the inflatable Homer Simpson Santa Clauses and stuff. So you should get a good deal, and it's a perfect time to plant. But no matter what, you must water the tree deeply and longly. That's not a word. I know it. Right after planting. You want to set a hose down at the base, set it to drip, and let it run for 24 hours. Really saturate the soil. Short, infrequent waterings are worthless. You really want to soak the soil deeply once a week for the first 2 years. That's the definition of a new tree, is 2 years. After that, it'll do fine just with what nature provides.
Good.
Good luck to you, sir. And I hope your call saved others who are about to plant.
Well, it sounds like the tree that I have is not going to survive, so I'll probably have to give it a funeral.
Yes. Well, you can do that as per your own beliefs. But yeah, now's a great time to buy the new one.
Okay.
All right, good luck to you.
Appreciate your help.
Thanks,
Mike.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and remind everybody out there to get ready to harvest all the fall leaves you can, because this bounty only calls out to you once a year, and shredded leaves are the essential component in a proper compost pile, and they make a great garden mulch. But don't go shopping for a rechargeable leaf blower with a shredding attachment just yet, because we'll be right back with important mosquito-fighting information and more of your important phone calls. I'm Mike McGrath, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from the eclectic studios of NPR station WDIY-FM in Bethlehem, PA.
Thank you to the members of WDIY for making all the programming you hear possible. Becoming a WDIY member is the best way to support your listening and to ensure WDIY will be here for the next person in our community to discover. Make your membership gift today at 610-694-8100 extension 4 or WDIY.org. We couldn't be here without you.
WDIY presents a selection of award-winning public affairs programs weeknights from 6 to 7 p.m. Listen to important conversations regarding art, science, politics, and more here in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Check our website for new topics and archived programs. Public Affairs on 88.1 FM, streaming at WDIY.org, on the app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to another thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden from the eclectic studios of WDIY-FM in Bethlehem, PA. I am your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, some really important mosquito-fighting information that's important not only to you, but to your entire community. But before that, your fabulous phone calls. Dennis, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike. I love your show.
Well, thank you very much. We love our listeners in return. Where are you, Den?
In Hopewell, New Jersey.
Okay. And what can we do you for?
Well, I have sort of an observation and some questions. Okay. Observation is that the invasive species of bugs seem to be getting ever more frequent, but in particular, there are sort of four of them that come to mind. The Japanese beetle is probably the most famous one, along with the spotted lanternfly. But ones that maybe stink bugs because they get into people's houses. And the other one, which is really kind of interesting to me right now, is the two-spotted Drosophila. I hope I pronounced that right. It's basically the fruit fly that lays eggs in raspberries and
makes them
edible.
That one is a scourge. First of all, the spotted lanternfly is an exception to the rule and actually might be the rule that we were inundated when this thing first entered the country not that many years ago. And since then, native predators have adapted to it quickly, and the numbers are significantly down. It's not really a problem unless you grow grapevines. And what I would recommend that people do early in the season, be on the lookout for their younger stage, which starts out as a pair of black dice with legs and then proceeds to a more bug-like, like a conifer bug, with the same spots, and then totally transforms into the spotted lanternfly. And what I would suggest for that in these wineries that are spraying way too much insecticide, either insecticidal soap or an oil spray, light horticultural oil, and get to them early in the season. Also, it wouldn't hurt to create habitat for toads, because toads, if the little guys starting out are on the ground, toads will eat them. Toads will eat anything. They got no class. Now, the Japanese beetle, as you note, has not been taken over and controlled by native beneficials. Part of the reason is it eats in both forms, in its larval form and as its adult form. In its larval stage, it's almost entirely feeding on lawn roots. But then it comes up and out as a scarab beetle and attacks anything, especially roses and some other plants. And the damage is easy to see who's doing it because the leaves are skeletonized. Now, only in the past few years, there has been a new form of BT. And this is BTG. For Galleria, and there's a form that you can spray on your lawn, and there's a form you can spray on the adults. And the nice thing about this is it doesn't harm anything. In the lawn, it doesn't harm your worms, and outside of your lawn, it doesn't harm pollinators, people, pets. It's entirely specific to Japanese and other scarab beetles. Now, what was the third one, not the one I want to avoid?
Stink bugs.
Oh, stink bugs. People are mostly annoyed by these things when they come into the house in the fall. And good timing, because this is the time to get a couple of pizza boxes and make little Mickey Mouse holes and then hang it flat on your south-facing side of the home. And yes, it'll look tremendously attractive, but it won't be up for long. Instead of looking for a crevice in the windows, they'll go into these pizza boxes, and they'll stay there because they think they're inside someplace. And then you take them down once a month and dump your catch into a bucket of soapy water, and that'll take care of that. And now is the time to do it. And then, all right, you had your fruit fly that leaves little worms in your raspberries. I would research fruit fly traps. These can be vinegar, these can be sweet, and try to capture them before they get into the developing raspberry. Now, I think you had something to say about one of those, at least.
I had something to say about two of them, but we'll start with the fruit fly since we were there. About 7 years ago, my raspberries were absolutely devastated by them. So I did everything I could, sprayed beneficial nematodes on the ground in an attempt to kill the larva. And that seemed to make a difference. At least for a couple of years, the incidence of them went down. They were not in every raspberry. But then in the last couple of years, they've sort of dwindled down to nothingness.
Yeah.
Three years ago, they really attacked the mulberries I have in a mulberry tree, which I use as a sacrificial lamb that the birds eat them instead of raspberries. And that works. That works well when the mulberries are producing berries, but it doesn't work so well now in the fall berries because the mulberries are done.
Well,
so I
can
netting anyway.
I can tell you that many listeners have found the same thing, that when they first arrived in this country, they were a holy terror. And now they're becoming less and less frequent. And again, this is the native predators adapting. It may be a pest to us, but it's a big bag of protein to them. And
right,
we don't have to do anything. The native predators will adapt because they want to eat those white worms.
Right.
All right. One more.
So the other one is stink bugs. Stink bugs aren't the problem. They get in the house a little bit, but that's not the big issue. The big issue is that the adults, when they come in early summer, start sucking juices out of things like fruit, tomatoes, raspberries, and for the fruit, they make little dimples in the fruit, so it makes them, doesn't ruin the fruit, they keep growing, but they make them kind of inedible.
They're notorious for attacking tomatoes.
And
since tomatoes need to be caged or supported in some way, it's very easy to go out and buy a roll of row cover material. Now, they come in all different strengths and seasonalities, so you want a light row cover. Just throw it over your tomato cage, make sure it goes all the way down and it's tucked in, and they won't be able to get at it.
That sounds like a great idea. I could probably try it on the raspberries, too. It would serve dual purpose because it would also keep the birds out.
Well, I think that your raspberry problem is on the way to solving itself.
No, the stink bugs actually attack the raspberries. So I was referring to the stink bug issue with the raspberries. What they do is they suck the juice out of one berry in one of the fruits, or two or three, so they
now see
turn white.
I have tons of raspberries and other cane fruits, and mm-hmm. I see stink bugs all the time. And the only crop they've gone after in my garden is tomatoes. So for something like this, it's just the old basic rules apply. Keep the soil fertile. Make sure you water during weeks we don't get rain. Don't spray really anything in this case. And for this case specifically, go out with a dustbuster and suck mm-hmm. them off the raspberries before they can do any damage.
Right.
All right, man. We got to go, Dennis, but thank you for a four-way question.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Our phone number, 610-694-8100, extension number 3. Andrea, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thank you. I've been looking forward to talking with you.
As have I. Not with myself, but with you. Although I do talk to myself, but we don't want to spend too much time on that. Where are you, Andrea?
I live in the Sauerland Mountains, just outside of Hopewell, New Jersey.
Most people from other parts of the country don't realize that New Jersey might have a small mountain or two. And what can we do for this Jersey girl?
Well, I'm in the process of pretty much doing a complete makeover of most of my gardens because I'm fed up with deer eating everything. Nothing I do, nothing I spray seems to stop them anymore. So I'm digging up a ton of stuff and have to replace it with something else. In particular, one of the gardens is right under a black walnut tree.
Ooh.
And by definition, being under a black walnut tree, it's also shady.
Right.
I could use some help on choosing some things to put in that garden as well as some others.
Okay. Well, I have two answers for you. One, it would be a waste of your time, at least half of your time, to cut down the black walnut because the naturally occurring chemical juglone that is toxic to other plants, especially tomatoes, is strongest in the roots. And you'd never get every root out. And if you plant a juglone-sensitive plant and the root systems meet, your good plant will be dead.
Okay. And I should have probably specified that these are flower gardens.
Doesn't matter.
Oh, I know that. But in terms of choosing things, I'm looking for flowering plants, perennials.
I'm not going to tell you exactly what to plant. You want me to name your children, too? I'm just going to solve your problem, if that's okay.
Okay.
So when you've got a tree and make it a black walnut tree, there's three problems. The juglone, the shade, and they have a very thirsty root system that makes it difficult for other plants to compete within their root zone, which can go out 150 feet. So my advice in your situation is get some nice black compost and start 6 inches away from the trunk of the tree and then mulch out a big circle that ends about halfway through the area of shade. It'll look fabulous, and plantings around the roots of trees rarely even survive, much less do well. I mean, think about it. You rarely, if ever, see something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, with the deer, there are two devices that can save your life here. One is a motion-activated sprinkler. I've been harking about these. I use them in my own garden. It's an impact sprinkler with a motion sensor. And you attach it to an ordinary garden hose, put it up on a stake, and put some batteries in the bottom. And whenever anything comes in and breaks the beam, it spurts, it makes noise, and then it throws a cup of cold water at them.
So
this is nothing deer can adapt to. And if you have this out very early in the season, when the new deer are figuring out their territory and you get them on the first time they come in, they have a mind that imprints that picture. Oh, the house is here. The tree is here. I don't like what happens here. I'll go eat the neighbor's azaleas. The other one, and, you know, it's nice because you're amortizing. You're buying it once, and it's not expensive. The other one is a product called the Wireless Deer Fence. This is a guy, I believe in Ohio, who invented these and sells them directly to gardeners, like out of his garage. What it is about a foot tall green stake that has metal prongs coming out of the top, and a little holder for a deer attractant pellet. You want to attract the deer. You want them to come right to your vulnerable plants. So you put four batteries in the belly of this beast, which is waterproofed. And no, you don't do that. You put the scent pellet on first. That's the mistake I made when I first got them. I powered it up and then reached in between the prongs. So at least I knew it worked. So again, get these out early in the season. Cold doesn't matter. It's not like you're going to freeze a hose or anything like that. And place them, if you know where deer are entering your garden, place them on the around the first vulnerable plant that they would encounter. Otherwise, take a look at lists of plants that deer love and put one or two around each plant. They're sold in sets of three, and they're very reasonable. And again, you're amortizing. You're not having to buy sprays or repellents or anything like that. Remarkably effective, and it is, write this down, kids.
I am. I'm taking notes.
I'm talking about the other ones out there. The wireless deer fence. Plug that into your search engine, and you'll go right to this guy, and you'll buy it direct from him. Easy peasy. And then you plant what you want.
Okay. Except under the walnut tree.
Right. Well, nothing's going to do well there. Again, you got jug loan, you've got shade, and you got root competition. You know, three strikes, you're out.
All right, then. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you. It was a good call.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Well, it's time for me to take a little break and emphasize that fall leaves must be shredded before you use them in a compost pile or as a garden mulch, because whole leaves take years to break down and they smother your plants instead of protecting them. But don't go checking to see if your leaf blower is also a sucker shredder just yet, because we'll be right back with important information about mosquito sprays and more of your important phone calls. I'm Mike McGrath, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from the eclectic studios of NPR station WDIY-FM in Bethlehem, PA. Are you ready to bring your tropical houseplants back indoors? I'm Mike McGrath, and on the next thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden, I'll reveal the timing you should follow to get them inside safely and how not to kill them once you do. Plus your fabulous phone calls. That's on the next You Bet Your Garden.
Spread the word about your business or organization to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR News and locally produced programs reaches thousands of engaged listeners in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable and effective way to provide information about your product and services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, 610-694-8100 or WDIY.org.
Welcome back to another thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden from the studios of WDIY-FM in Bethlehem, PA. I am your host, and we're in the stretch now, cats and kittens. In just a little bit, we will get to one of our most important ever questions of the week, explaining how you can protect yourself from the nasty viruses mosquitoes are carrying more often. But first, let's go to the phones. Nina, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike.
Now, before we get started, I understand that you are a teacher and you are in your classroom urging your students to be quiet, right?
Yes, I am. They're doing a fantastic job being quiet there. And we're in a sixth grade science class.
Okay, sixth grade science. Very good. All right, so let's get it out of their systems. Everybody can yell, hi.
There we go.
That was exceptional. All right, what can we do you for?
All right, I live in Philadelphia. I have a elderberry that I bought about 5 years ago. It was about a foot and a half tall. It is now 10 feet by 10 feet. It's in a fairly shady spot. And last spring, I started noticing that certain branches were hollowing out at the branch Y, where it was stuck to another branch, and the branches were just turning brown and dying.
Okay.
So I looked that up, and I think it was verticillium, And that's what it's looking like.
Okay. So where'd you buy this plant?
From a small native plant gardening center.
Okay. You can use the name.
They're no longer in existence, but it was from the Collins Nursery, which I think is opening back up at Ambler, Temple Ambler's. They're opening that back up.
Now, you say the plant has been in the ground how many years?
About 5 years.
About 5 years. How did it do the first 3 years?
It's been, the first 4 years, it's been amazing. It's like 10 feet by 10 feet. It was full of flowers and elderberries, and the birds loved them. It's probably not in the best spot. It's in a fairly shady spot, but it just took off.
Okay.
And now it's not.
And it is the number one natural antiviral. I take black elderberry syrup all fall and all winter long. Still, my kids who are grown, when they get a cold or the flu, they already have a bottle around. It's done well in numerous scientific studies. Do you use it at all for...
No, I've never harvested the berries because I didn't know what to do with them. And plus, the birds love them, so...
Well, if you want to make your own natural antiviral, you can go online and get real easy-peasy recipes. Okay. Now, how long has it looked bad?
It's been since last spring.
Okay. Did anything change?
No. It was just all of a sudden when it was coming back up after the winter, some of the shoots on the outer part of the plant were coming up weird. I started noticing that they were falling over, and some of the little new branches were just kind of collapsing. So that's it. Started doing that.
Are you saying this plant dies back to the ground in winter?
No, it doesn't die back to the ground. I'm saying the new shoots that were coming
up. Okay.
And the new branches that were coming up were the more established, the little branches, not the bigger branches. The bigger established branches still look okay, but
okay.
It seems to be like dying from the outside.
Okay. Is it mulched?
No.
Okay, good. The shade comes from trees or buildings?
It's next to a wooden wall, retaining wall from my backyard neighbor.
Right.
So that provides a little bit of shade. And then there's about 10 feet away, kind of equidistance, is a neighbor's white ash.
Okay.
That for some reason still alive. And then I have a juniper, a very tall juniper tree, and those provide much of the shade.
Okay, so since it was planted, you realize that those trees have grown larger and the level of shade has increased.
Yeah, those trees are pretty well established. So the shade has been about the same the whole time that I've had the plant.
Have you ever pruned it?
No.
Okay, and I don't grow elderberries, but they bloom in the spring, right?
Yeah, yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what I want you to do, I have no idea exactly what's going on, although I can see it. And this is the only year this has happened?
Yeah, it's the first time. That's why I was so concerned. And then I was away most of the summer.
Well, so, but the older branches are fine. They're flowering.
Yeah.
They're fruiting.
Yeah, the whole thing fruited and flowered.
Okay, great. So what you're going to do is you're going to wait until winter. And then you're going to go out and prune off all of this new growth.
Okay.
You know, you can struggle for the rest of your life as to why. But real easy, let's get rid of this weak growth. And actually, the best time to do that would be in the dead of winter, or at least after we've had a full hard frost.
Okay.
And get rid of them. And then keep an eye out in the spring. If the same thing happens, just trim them off. Don't worry about what's causing it. As long as the main part of the tree stays healthy, you don't have a problem.
Okay.
All right?
All right. That sounds perfect. I'll try it.
All right. Well, good luck to you. And bye, kids.
They're already gone. I kicked them out.
Oh, okay.
All right. Thank you. Have a great day.
You too. And thank you for
Bye-bye.
Teaching.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye. All right. As promised, it is time for a very important question of the week, which we are calling mosquito trucks. Are they spraying the wrong thing? Now, let me emphasize that mosquitoes are really dangerous. In fact, when I was asked to name the animal slash creature that poses the biggest threat to humans, I quoted numerous studies that identified mosquitoes as the number one answer. And those mosquitoes have been spreading some nasty viruses here in the United States this season, and people are understandably demanding action. Now, when it comes to, quote, insects that prey on people, the biggest and most rational fears are ticks, which are actually arachnids, like scorpions and Spider-Man, and then mosquitoes. And while climate change has allowed those ticks to be active longer in the season and extend their range, this year's insect fear focus has been on the alarming uptick of mosquitoes that carry nasty diseases like West Nile virus and the triple E variant of equine encephalitis. Equine meaning horses, encephalitis being a virus that makes your brain swell and not in a good way. There were few good organic options to fight mosquitoes back in the 1990s when I was editor-in-chief of Organic Gardening magazine. But then came BTI. All right, short diversion. The basic form of BT, short for Bacillus thuringiensis, had already been around for many decades. Originally discovered in Thuringen, Germany, this organism quickly killed caterpillar pests that chewed on the leaves of sprayed plants without posing any harm to anything else. It was and still is a perfect, specific organic control. By the way, the best known brand names for BT are Dipel and Thuricide. Then other strains of BT began to be discovered. The old original caterpillar killing version is often simply referred to as BT, but the full scientific name is BT coustaci. Then a new strain was discovered, BTI, short for BT israeliensis, because it was first discovered on a cat's paw in Israel. Really, honest. BTI literally has the potential to save the world. When donut-shaped mosquito dunks or pellet-sized mosquito granules are added to standing water, it prevents mosquito eggs from developing into biting adults without any risk to people, pets, fish, amphibians, etc. BTI only affects members of the fly family that breed in water. That's right, mosquitoes are in the fly family. Here's the cycle. Female mosquitoes take a blood meal from us or another mammal, then seek out standing water in which to lay their eggs. If that water has been treated with BTI, no adults will emerge to harass us. This method is endorsed by the CDC, Centers for Disease Control, and every other rational organization. Better yet, in 2019, Florida researchers tried spraying BTI mist out of old-school pesticide spray trucks and had tremendous success. With just a few tweaks to the spray nozzles and experiments with different concentrations of BTI, they achieved 100% mosquito control success, which is unheard of in science. I'll post that research and other details with this article at the You Bet Your Garden section of the Gardens Alive website, under resources. Back to this summer. In August, local and national news broadcasts started showing trucks spraying for mosquitoes in many locations, especially New York City. I thought, I hope they're spraying BTI. Then I proceeded to read endless news articles about the spraying, and not a single one identified what was being sprayed. Finally, on one of the deepest research dives I've ever attempted, I found some legal documents that revealed they were spraying pyrethroids. What I said out loud then cannot be repeated here. Pyrethroids are chemical pesticides that are toxic to honeybees, native bees, and other pollinators. They are even more deadly to fish and amphibians like toads and frogs, with label warnings not to spray near bodies of water or even clean equipment where any leftovers could get into water. They are one of the least environmentally sound pesticides in the world. Oh, by the way, they're toxic to cats as well. Numerous studies have long shown that only about 0.5% of these chemical sprays ever hit a mosquito. The reality is that spray trucks are out there to visibly appease people worried about mosquitoes. It's essentially a PR stunt that deceives people into thinking they're being protected when they're not. I could only find one spraying directive that even mentioned BT. And even then, it was a brief mention after a long list of chemical sprays. And the authors of this manifest appeared not to know the difference between BT and BTI. You know, we're like an ancient advanced civilization that collapsed and lost all its knowledge. Now, it's up to you. Ask your local municipality what they spray, and do it now before next year's plans and budgets are made. If they don't reply, you can ask your local newspaper and/or TV news crew to file a Freedom of Information Act request, reminding them that they're being handed a great story. Use the references and citations I'll provide online to start pestering your local authorities to switch. I even thought of a potential t-shirt slogan. Kill mosquitoes, not fish, frogs, and honeybees. And by the way, if you get these made up, get me an XL. And protect your family directly by leaving out buckets of standing water treated with BTI beginning early in the spring. Female mosquitoes stay close to where they were born, so you'll break the cycle by preventing that first generation from appearing around your home. And then you're going to wonder where all the skeeters went. That sure was some insightful and important information about spraying to control mosquitoes, now wasn't it? Luckily, you can check out the article and a whole bunch of supporting references and studies at your leisure or your leisure at the Gardens Alive section of the Gurneys website. That's Gurneys. Yikes, my producer is threatening to bag my BTI if I don't get out of the studio. We must be any time. We must be any time? No, we are on time, and you can call us anytime at 610-694-8100, extension number 3. Or send us your email, you're tired, you're poor, you're wretched refuse, teeming to our garden shore at youbetyourgarden1@gmail.com. Either way, please include your location and phone number. We're begging you here. You'll find all of our updated contact information, plus links to our archive of garden answers and links to our internationally renowned podcast. It's all at the You Bet Your Garden Facebook page. You Bet Your Garden is a public radio show and podcast produced and delivered to you every week from the eclectic studios of NPR station WDIY in Bethlehem, PA. You Bet Your Garden was created by Mike McGrath. Mike McGrath was created when he was accidentally exposed to a dose of gamma radiation and has been forced to wear purple pants ever since. Our musical director is Ken Queter. Our social media director is Amanda Norfleet. Our peerless prince of profound production is James Ziprode. Margaret McConnell is the executive director of WDIY-FM. Our guardian angel is the lovely Jonas Bowen. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and I'll be coaxing my fall lettuce and other greens to grow faster until we meet again next week.